Welcome to this special edition of the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Fowler. As part of our OncView video series, Cancer Network spoke with Dr. Lee Schwartzberg of the West Cancer Center and Research Institute in Germantown, Tennessee. We talked about updates to the NCCN guidelines regarding HR-positive breast cancer. Schwartzberg focused on extended adjuvant therapy, molecular biomarkers, the role of genomic testing, and more with regard to HR-positive breast cancer.
So, Dr. Schwartzberg, why is the decision about whether to use extended adjuvant therapy so important, and what are the considerations?
Christy, when we think about early-stage breast cancer, we focus on the subgroups that are candidates for endocrine therapy. And the largest subgroup, about two-thirds of patients, are hormone receptor, that is either estrogen receptor or progesterone receptor, or both positive and HER2 negative. An additional 10 or 15% are HR positive and HER2 positive. And after they finish adjuvant chemotherapy and anti-HER2 therapy, they're also candidates for endocrine therapy. When we think about the initial treatment of patients after chemotherapy, or without chemotherapy, the issue is that endocrine therapy is very well tolerated as a whole and has a tremendous amount of benefit for patients. So essentially any patient who is hormone receptor positive is a candidate for this treatment. The standard treatment is 5 years of adjuvant endocrine therapy, and that could either be tamoxifen or an aromatase inhibitor, or ovarian function suppression in premenopausal women with one of those classes of agents. What we've learned over time is that there is a carryover effect of endocrine therapy. So it continues to work beyond the 5 years that the patient actually takes the treatment. And through about year 10, it continues to widen the difference between recurrence of disease and not in patients who are HR positive. But after that time, the effect basically is lost and there is no further benefit. That led to a lot of studies in the 1990s and early 2000s about extending adjuvant endocrine therapy, going from 5 years to 7 years, or in most cases to 10 years of adjuvant endocrine therapy. And these trials did show that there was a benefit to extended adjuvant therapy. The overall benefit was modest in terms of absolute benefit, several percent. But for an individual woman to not have her cancer come back, and particularly not have her cancer come back in a distant site and therefore represent metastatic disease, is really important. So we've spent our time since these trials were performed trying to figure out who are the best candidates for extended adjuvant therapy. And a lot of work has been done in that area. And in selecting patients, we hope to do a good job to minimize the toxicity of extended therapy and also maximize the benefit in terms of invasive disease-free survival and improve that.
What are the predictive and prognostic factors that you use to guide treatment selection as an outline in the NCCN guidelines?
The factors we use to determine what kind of adjuvant therapy patients should receive are based on a combination of clinical factors, or so-called anatomical factors, patient-related factors, and tumor-related factors, that is the biology of the tumor. In terms of the clinical factors and the anatomical factors, that relates to the size of the tumor, whether it's very small, a T1 lesion or T1A and B lesion, which would be considered very small, less than 1 centimeter, T1C, 1 to 2 centimeters, say T2, 2 to 5 centimeters, T3. And as the size of the tumor goes up, the risk goes up. Very importantly, the nodal status is an indicator of prognosis, with no nodes being better than any nodes positive, and essentially an incremental risk that goes up with the number of nodes that are positive. We also look at the grade of the tumor. That's a very important aspect of prognosis that sometimes is forgotten. And there is some variation among pathologists about grade, which is why it's a bit difficult to standardize. But clearly, patients who have grade 3 tumors, which is the highest grade, or undifferentiated cancers, have a much higher risk than those that have low grade tumors. So the grading is 1, 2, or 3, low, intermediate, and high risk. The biologic factors that we look at include the biomarkers that are essential for every breast cancer to have recorded. And that includes estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor, and HER2. Estrogen receptor and progesterone receptor positivity make the cancer hormone receptor positive and therefore potentially hormone sensitive. And by blocking estrogen, either by blocking it competitively with a drug like tamoxifen, or in women whose ovaries are no longer functioning, by blocking the production of the small amount of estrogen that is made in other tissues through conversion of other factors through aromatase. So we can use an aromatase inhibitor to block essentially almost all estrogen from being made. And that basically is a growth signal and a signal to keep cancer cells alive. So that little bit of estrogen can do that, and aromatase inhibitors can work very well in patients who are postmenopausal. In fact, in the early trials, when compared with tamoxifen, they were better than tamoxifen. So in postmenopausal women, aromatase inhibitors are the standard of care for adjuvant endocrine therapy.
So Dr. Schwartzberg, what are the genomic assays and what is their role in early stage breast cancer?
The third aspect of looking at factors that will help us determine prognosis and predictive value in adjuvant therapy for breast cancer are the newer genomic assays. Newer in the sense that they've now been around for about 15 years and are used quite broadly. Mm-hmm. These assays look at an expression panel of genes in the tumor. This is not germline, of course. This is looking at the tumor and the expression panel. They were originally done with arrays of mRNA, a messenger RNA, which shows the expression of each of those genes. And either using a panel type of technology or using PCR technology for the specific genes that were determined, we can get a score of whether a particular tumor is low, intermediate, or high risk for recurrence. Now, we have several different types of genomic assays or commercial assays that are available. And interestingly, they all use a different gene set to come to these decisions, and all of them are validated. So they are very good at prognosis in terms of telling whether a patient's tumor, and typically combined with the clinical features that I mentioned already, will be a low risk, intermediate risk, or high risk for recurrence of disease. Initially, these assays were established for node negative patients. Recently, we have had prospective studies looking at in the node negative or in the node positive setting, how well these assays predict for a recurrence of disease or not. These assays are also important to help us make a decision about chemotherapy up front. The 21 gene assay and the 70 gene assay have been looked at prospectively and give us information about the benefit of chemotherapy in those people that have low, intermediate, or high risk scores. And what we find is those with high scores benefit from chemotherapy in that setting, whether they're node negative or node positive. And so that has become the standard for helping making the decision about chemotherapy in many patients with early stage breast cancer. As I mentioned before, that we do not use genomic expression profiles to make a decision about adjuvant endocrine therapy because we essentially offer that to any patient who is hormone receptor positive.
When do you do genomic testing in your patients with HR-positive breast cancer? And moreover, do you test all patients, and why or why not?
I have used genomic assays since they first came on the scene, and I have found them extremely helpful over the years. That said, I don't use them in every single patient with early stage breast cancer. If a patient is not a candidate for chemotherapy, I don't use a genomic assay. And that might be particularly at the extremes of age. So someone who had many comorbidities, was older and had a small tumor, I certainly wouldn't even consider chemotherapy in that case. Genomic assays have their most utility in cases where you're not sure if you're going to give chemotherapy. We give chemotherapy to essentially all HR positive patients who have four or more positive nodes. So that's not a setting that we use them. And even those that have bigger tumors and one, two, or three nodes, we typically will err on the side of overtreatment and give chemotherapy because we don't want to miss an opportunity to help a patient in that setting. But the majority of early stage breast cancers really are stage one or two and have either node negative disease, have tumors that are small to intermediate size, and have sometimes one or two nodes positive. And I find genomic assays extremely useful in that case, both to give me a more accurate prognosis for the individual patient, and two, to help me make the decision about chemotherapy. So all of the assays, and there are now several that are recognized by the NCCN, and all of them are prognostic. Some of them are predictive for chemotherapy or predictive for extended adjuvant endocrine therapy utilization, which we'll talk about.
How has the NCCN integrated the use of genomic assays into their guideline recommendations for early HR-positive breast cancer?
The NCCN has expanded their recommendations regarding genomic assays over the last several years. And this is a good thing because it reflects the fact that we have so much more information about these genomic assays now than we had just a few years ago. That's based on both prospective trials that have reported over the last several years and have given us a good prospective look at where these assays will have utility, as well as an increasing number of what's called retrospective prospective trials, where tumor samples from studies that were done years ago are in a blinded fashion tested by a genomic assay and sorted into the risk. And then we can go back and look at and see what the outcome actually was in that population. If one has enough tumor samples to mirror the entire population that was treated in a particular study, the retrospective prospective approach is really quite accurate as well.
So Dr. Schwartzberg, what are the data on which this decision was based on? For example, to add these assays to the guidelines, and why did the guidelines decide to incorporate them?
The first assay that made the guideline was the 21 gene assay, based on the fact that it was actually one of the first assays to come on the market and the first to have a lot of information from multiple retrospective prospective trials. But NCCN changed its approach and changed the format, and it now has a whole section which is devoted to all the different assays that are available. And it reports them whether they're predictive of either a chemotherapy benefit or an endocrine benefit, and whether or not they're prognostic, and what the level of evidence is. So there are actually now several pages in the guidelines that go into great detail about these particular assays and make it very clear for the user to reference them and to find out how best to utilize them. And the most recent data that has come has been the prospective data from the RxPONDER trial for the 21 gene assay in node positive patients, which has just made it into the guidelines over the last year after that study was presented. Updates of the MINDAC trial, which looked at the 70 gene assay in clinically high and clinically low with genomically high or genomically low based on the assay, and has updated results. And the BCI assay, which in particular has now had several data sets that look at the benefit, the predictive value of extended adjuvant endocrine therapy in patients who would be at higher risk and seeing whether or not individual patients would benefit or not from extended adjuvant therapy. And that update was incorporated into the NCCN guidelines in early 2021. So these guidelines have changed quite a bit. And if you're looking at an older NCCN guideline before 2020 or even earlier, that will not have the information. So I urge everyone to get the most updated version of the guidelines. Everyone knows that the NCCN guidelines are updated quite frequently. We're actually on version 4 already of 2021 for breast cancer guidelines at the midpoint in the year. And so it reflects the fact that there's a lot of great data that's coming out and clinical trials that help inform our decisions on how to help our patients with breast cancer.
Absolutely. Based on the NCCN recommendations regarding genomic assays in the setting and the data supporting their use, do you think this should be the new standard of care when making decisions about extended adjuvant therapy in hormone receptor positive breast cancer?
I do believe that the NCCN guidelines reflect accurately the value of genomic assays. And when we're talking about extended adjuvant endocrine therapy, that's can be a difficult decision, particularly for those patients who we would think of as being in that intermediate clinical risk for recurrence. And I'll give you an example of a patient like that. It would be a patient perhaps who had a 3-centimeter tumor, could be node negative or one node positive, could have a low-grade tumor or an intermediate-grade tumor, and has had some difficulty in getting through the 5 years of the standard adjuvant endocrine therapy. In those cases, those women really don't want to and shouldn't have to take therapy that isn't going to benefit them. So we need to know two things. We need to know, first of all, what is their risk after 5 years of having a recurrence? And remember that in hormone receptor positive breast cancer, over half the relapses and recurrences occur after 5 years. So we do have to keep this longer perspective in mind. Mm-hmm. And we also need to know, importantly, whether or not a therapy that we're going to give them is going to benefit them. As I mentioned, in unselected populations by genomic assays, there is benefit. That benefit is on the order of several percent and on an absolute basis and on a proportional basis is in the 15 to 20% range. So that means that the majority of patients who take those drugs or did take them in the trials that tested extended adjuvant endocrine therapy didn't benefit from them. We need biomarkers, assays that can help us personalize medicine more than we do by treating a whole group to benefit a few. And that's where genomic assays really do shine. BCI has also shown benefit in a number of other trials, including the ATOM trial, which looked at 10 years of tamoxifen versus 5 years and showed a benefit across the board of modest degree, but significant. And this can help tell us who would benefit from 10 years of adjuvant tamoxifen if one wanted to give that drug compared to 5 years. And then most recently in the IDEAL trial that tested an additional 2 years of adjuvant therapy with an aromatase inhibitor versus an additional 5 years and showed the benefit for the 5-year group over the 2-year group based on what's called the HI index part of the BCI, which gives us the predictive value of using additional endocrine therapy. So we have now multiple data sets that show not only prognosis, so we can tell a woman within a range what their risk is of recurring after 5 years, in years 5 through 10, and then as part of the test. But the other part of the test, importantly, is predicting whether or not there would be benefit if you're at high risk to receive additional adjuvant endocrine therapy. So that kind of information is really critical for me to make that decision in a shared fashion with a woman who is sitting across from me in the exam room and wants to do everything she can to to reduce her risk of recurrence, but certainly doesn't want to take medication if it's not valuable and likely to help her.
What are some of the unmet needs in the treatment of early stage HR positive breast cancer?
Because early stage HR positive breast cancer is such a common subtype of breast cancer, we still have patients that are relapsing, and it's a large number of patients that are at risk. Although I have to underscore the fact that the majority of these patients do extremely well today, because we have the tools now to know when to give them chemotherapy, when to give them adjuvant endocrine therapy, and when to give extended adjuvant endocrine therapy. I think the biggest risk we have left is understanding the patients who are at the highest risk of relapse. And I'm excited by the fact that we have data now emerging that using a medication from the CDK4/6 class, abemaciclib, in a phase 3 trial showed benefit, early benefit, because the follow-up of this trial is fairly short, but showing that in these patients who are at high risk of recurrence, that abemaciclib added to adjuvant endocrine therapy can reduce that risk of recurrence. That's not yet approved by the FDA in the adjuvant setting. We're hopeful that that might happen in the near future, and that would give us another tool. And there are other adjuvant therapy trials ongoing with CDK4/6 inhibitors, as well as other targeted therapies that may help us improve those patients who are at highest risk, those that have clinically extensive tumors and extensive nodal status or very high-grade tumors. And so we can make even more of an impact on these hormone receptor-positive breast cancers.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Schwartzberg.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Or you can listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again next time.